Hello and welcome to Dealcast, voice of Merger Market, the world's premier publication about mergers and acquisitions. I'm Juliana Needham. I'm a journalist who's been covering M&A for a decade. In this episode, we're talking luxury goods, handbags, designer clothes, champagne and more. How is the business model of world-famous European brands that manufacture in China changing in a world of tariffs? To find out, we're heading to Paris, where many of the world's luxury brands are based. From there, I'm joined by Areske Yeish, who is the France Bureau Chief for Merger Market. Hi, Areske. Thanks very much for joining me.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So, can we start by looking at this model of European luxury goods brands that use Chinese manufacturers? How has that developed and how does it work? And if you could mention some of the key players, that would be fantastic.
I mean, the luxury business model for more than a decade now is based on European branding and Chinese manufacturing, which means that the added value is mostly built through a marketing and a packaging and supply chain where the products are sold. And the big brands, the major luxury conglomerates, so LVMH, Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy, owned by Bernard Arnault, or Kering, Gucci's owner, also a French-based luxury group, where getting their key flagship products manufactured in China at lower costs, and they would sold most of the products in Western Europe. At very hefty prices. So it seems that this business model, which proved to be very lucrative, is not, I don't know if it's over, but we are heading towards some sort of crossroad where the current geopolitical situation is questioning that model, and especially with recent developments and trade wars triggered by the US administration in April with the so-called Liberation Day.
Okay, so what are you hearing from your sources now? Is there an expectation that European companies, these luxury goods brands, are looking to change where they manufacture? Are they exploring other opportunities? And we'll have a little bit of a look at the trade war in a moment. Obviously, the news on that keeps changing, so it's really hard to make any decisions for these companies. But yeah, what are you hearing at the moment?
So sources are pretty clear about the fact that the current geopolitical situation and the lower growth perspectives in China had a negative impact on the luxury sector. That also, there were a lot of in the European Union a lot of, doubt about the Chinese production model and the so-called debate on European industrial sovereignty is also questioning a model where most of the products are manufactured in China. So we are at a crossroad, and sources flag that many luxury giants, which rely on the global consumption and on manufacturing projects in China, needs to think about what should be next move if the situation keeps deteriorating, geopolitically speaking.
Okay, I'm going to come on to the trade war and tariffs in a moment, but it's not all European luxury goods brands that manufacture in China. Some of them are very committed to Europe, and there's been a recent deal which reflects that.
Oh yeah, true. I mean, also this sector, the luxury industry, is also relies heavily on consumption trends and how they have evolved in Europe, for instance. So you want to get as close as possible to your consumers, and it's true that climate change and also the current geopolitical situation, are pushing some consumers to think about a better, or not a better, but a more sustainable way or a more local way of consuming products and luxury products. And luxury players are aware of this. So there are already a few deals which reflect the needs to address that type of consumers. And recently we saw the acquisition of Versace by Prada as a way to boost local production. In France, we also saw Chanel acquiring two Italian textile manufacturer, Graymere and Montera. So those deals clearly show that there is also a reflection on perhaps relocating some production sites.
Yeah, and I guess the benefit of that is that it's more protected, those businesses are more protected against any ongoing trade war, which we will come on to.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want me to answer to that question now, I think tariffs, the tariffs proclaimed by the US administration in April are some sort of accelerator for sources. I mean, we already saw that the model we talked about, so Chinese manufacturing, European branding, was at issue before the tariffs. And I think the tariffs are just an accelerator, but also this creates now a lot of uncertainty because we have no clear view on what could be the deal between the EU and the US. What is the real deadline? Whether it's going to be July the 9th or later. So yes, let's say that the tariffs are accelerating the reflection on how to cope with the new geopolitical era we are entering in.
Yeah, as you mentioned, there are so many moving parts here. It's nearly impossible to see where the tariffs or how the tariffs will impact those luxury goods, the supply chains, but also the end consumers, with two big markets being the US and China.
Yeah, it's a big question mark. I mean, before the US tariff, we saw some very famous luxury CEO. I don't want to name Bernard Arnault from LVMH here, but I just did. Went to the White House. I don't know for what reason, but I suppose they are trying ways to adjust to potential tariffs now, but before a way to compensate a decrease in sales in China, for instance. So according to sources, there are two options I have in mind, and I understood because I'm sure there are others. One would be to bet on growing markets and hope for more luxury consumers in those markets. I think of Dubai, the Emirates, or Singapore. But are those markets big enough to compensate a drop in consumption in China and the US now, probably, if tariffs are applied? And the other option is to relocate some production sites in key markets, probably the US. I think we heard with LVMH that there were some rumors on the double listing, one listing in the US. I think it's not the best option for them, according to sources. So I think there is many sources agree to say that there is a wait and see attitude at the moment. Will the tariffs really apply? And what should be done to adjust to the current geopolitical situation?
And let's end on some good news. What are the main components that are still driving robust M&A activity? You've covered some of those already. And also, are there any key deals we should be looking out for?
So, yes, as we talked a little bit earlier, some defensive M&A trying to get closer to some new consumption trends is part of the luxury industry DNA. So if you see that some consumers consume more sustainable products or more local products, you want to relocate production sites or make sure that you have sustainable products for them. So we saw the channel deal with Montero, for instance, and Gremaire, and the Prada Versace deal. I think some comparable deals should, I mean, we don't have any names for the moment, but some comparable deals should happen this year. We have also big luxury brands, not brands, like conglomerates, which have to think about strategic moves to adapt to the current geopolitical changes. Which means that we can see some asset disposal, non-core asset disposals. There were many rumors on a potential spin-off of Moët Hennessy, so champagne and spirits, the champagne and spirits unit of LVMH. Because I mean, we have to say that the luxury space is very diverse. So depending on prices, you know, you have some goods that are less replaceable than others. You can drink Californian sparkling wine, but you want to have your Hermes product, and it can be produced elsewhere. So obviously, they want to focus on those core products that are not easily replaceable and where they can increase prices and perhaps sell non-core assets. So this is like this is one of the big rumors we heard, but it has been downplayed by LVMH so far. And also, we should keep an eye on Kering, Gucci's owner. Kering experienced, I mean, the share price dropped by almost 100%. I mean, the value was divided by two almost in 1 year. So some strategic reflection needs to be conducted, and this could lead to some non-core asset disposal as well. So that's what sources told us so far.
Wonderful. Good to talk to you, Oreski, and speak to you again. That was Oreski Yeish, who is the France Bureau Chief for Merger Markets. And just to point out that we're recording this on Monday, the 2nd of June. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Dealcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please follow it. If you're listening through Apple, please rate and review the show. If you'd like to find out more about what we've been talking about on this episode, have a look at our show notes. Join us again next week.